On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are on the hunt for a killer in 70s Yorkshire with The Long Shadow on ITV, getting hot and bothered in the kitchen with Boiling Point on BBC One, and catching up with Joe Gilgan and the gang in the new series of Brassic on Sky. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that comes to you from A, the wee hours, and B, far-flung corners of the nation today, as we are recording at the crack of dawn, because Boyd is on the road. Isn't that right, Boyd? You're in Cambridge, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm in Cambridge at the Royal Television Society Convention.
The RTS.
He's so damn fancy.
Yeah, I'm here along with Piers Morgan.
Oh, dear.
Emma Thompson.
All the greats.
Emma Thompson.
Is that your fellow GB News pundit, Piers Morgan?
Yeah,
is that
he's actually Talk TV, I believe, just to be
accurate. Oh, is he? It's all the fucking same.
I mean, it's. And James Corden, who I am interviewing later on in front of an audience of thousands this afternoon.
Have you done any hobnobbing yet?
They had a big dinner last night in King's College, Cambridge, in this massive hall, which was, I hobnobbed there. And Catherine, what's her name? The comedian.
Catherine Ryan.
Ryan, thank you. Did the after dinner speech, and she was very funny. And it was quite topical, of course, because she was the one who talked about the mysterious comedian who was a predator on that Louis Theroux interview. So she touched on it she didn't really touch on it much, which would have been tasteless, but it was interesting, to say the least. And she was very funny. So yeah, I have been hobnobbing to some extent, but the full hobnob takes place today.
The chocolate-covered hobnobs, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. The Corden chocolate hobnobs.
Now, crucially, are you going to call James Corden out on stage for having not left us a five-star review?
No.
I think you should.
But I won't call him out on stage, but I will. I'll talk to him about it off stage. Behind the scenes.
Unless he's done it under a pseudonym and he was one of the many people who just called me a bellend anonymously, and that's absolutely fine. But I just want to make sure that we've got our five-star rating.
We do need to do something because we have slowed down now. I had a look yesterday in preparation for this.
Oh, really?
And we've come to an absolute standstill. So we need him. We need the JC to get things rolling.
I'll find out. It may be because, of course, he listened to the show when he was in America, when he lived in America, and he had lots of, he probably had like a commute from home to the office to CBS. I don't know what his situation is now. He's back in London. Maybe he doesn't have time to listen anymore. I don't know. I'll find out.
Obviously, he should make time.
Yeah, but also, crucially, he has access to the internet to leave the review. Right, so that's what we want. So I'm happy for a historic based review.
Okay. Also, he travels quite a lot. If he could leave the review from Fiji, that would be really helpful.
Fiji, that's where we really need to do our work, guys.
Yeah, we need to get the Fijians on board. Oh yeah, no, you've had a late night. I had a late night.
Yeah, yeah.
I was hobnobbing, but in your ends rather than rather than in Cambridge, because I did an event last night and ended up in the wilds of Bermondsey being pursued by assassins. So that was an unusual thing for me on a Wednesday night, it has to be said. I hosted a Q&A for the Continental for Prime Ministers, and they turned this place, as you know, Boyd, you were there the night before, they turned this little hotel in Shoreditch into the hotel, the Continental. It's all very 70s themed. The only thing is, I mean, for something they didn't think through, it's in Shoreditch, so everyone looks like that. So, you're like, oh, are you in costume? Oh, no, you're just a hipster. Okay, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. You really couldn't tell the difference. But other than that, I have to say, it was a very good job.
Did they give out coins?
People had to pay coins to get in. They were old school, like New York police. I'm walking here, like shouting at you from horseback, literally from horseback.
The horse was quite spectacular.
The horse was great. There were really cool 70s cars and stuff. Mm. There was a whole immersive experience involving the police. Like it was a giggle.
Oh, they went all out.
I said at the time, because they have these actors, who are pretending to be cops or whatever, kind of shouting stuff at you, and paparazzi photographers were there, and reporters, like there were people, reporters asking you questions, right, in this immersive experience. And I really want to know, like, what do agents say to their actors when this kind of offer comes in? It's like, we want you to pretend to be a policeman at this immersive event with loads of journalists, and they're like, oh really, is that
Oh, must we?
As a recipient of it, or an audience member, I do find it hellish going through that
completely.
I avoid it like the plague, and then when I get stopped, I know I'm going to play along, but I just find it very difficult.
It is quite stressful, yeah.
It's why secret cinema, like when people come up to you and they're really, really earnest and in character and you're like, really, you know, it's a Thursday night. I can't be dealing with this.
Yeah. Did you have the whiskey cocktail though in the...
I did not. Knowing what happened to you and Pilot Plus listeners, Pilot Plus listeners will be very aware of what happened to Boydie when he had his whiskey cocktail. I stuck to a nice Diet Coke on the rocks at my 70s bar, so I was compos mentis. Oh, although, good. Frankly, that didn't help me get home last night because so just to be clear, so just to paint the picture, I don't know whether Amazon had arranged this because it's very much in keeping with the setting, but it was absolutely chucking it down like torrential apocalyptic end of the world type rain, and while I did steal a continental umbrella to keep myself dry, I was walking through the streets with like desperately with my phone out with City Mapper on, trying to work out how the hell to get home. Got chucked off a station. So I was at Canada Water Station and I got off there and I was going to change to the other line. And then everyone was looking really confused. I had my headphones in, was listening to music. And and genuinely, like, everyone was looking confused. So I take my headphones out and this bloke on the tannoy is just going, leave the station. Leave the station. I was like, oh my God, that's his system.
Had you not plugged your headphones in? Was Taylor actually playing out?
It could have been. It could have been a new experimental song. That's actually very true.
Was this still part of the immersive experience?
Yes, it could have been. It could have been. Primarily had arranged for it to be shut down. Yeah. But genuinely, this guy, very insistent, was going, the station is now closed. Leave the station. And he was like, and I was like, oh my God, is it like, was the security alert? What's going on? I still don't know what went on, but the upside of it was I ended up wandering around the streets of Canada Water
and then Bermondsey
in the rain.
You're bringing all the drama and you don't know why you were thrown out the station.
Yeah. No idea. No idea. None at all. But the guy was brilliant. Incredibly insistent to the point of panic. Like genuinely. Which actually made me ever so slightly nervous. I'm like, that's a very, very insistent call to leave the station. Is it actively on fire? I don't know. You know, who knows? Maybe he just needed to get home to watch Brassic. I couldn't tell you. But it was confusing. But anyway, the result was I was very, very wet and ended up on a bus. And I do not like buses, but I was on a bus trying to get back to London Bridge.
Because you have to like mingle with the hoi polloi.
Well, it's not that. It's because when you're on a train, like you know where it's going because there's that little line on the sign with the little dots, which are the station, and it tells you where you're going. When you're on a bus, you're just in the streets and you're just looking out. I don't know, fair car. It's dark. Like, what is this? Every street looks the same to me. I don't know where I am. So I don't know when to get off. And I find it quite stressful.
You're being driven. You're not like having to fend for yourself.
And also, they do tell you what the stops are on the bus. They have they have the indicator showing you what the stops are. So,
and also, often they have announcements going.
Not a screen, just like a digital, you know, thing. You just didn't see.
Yeah, but is it going to say something like
next
blah, 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 road? And I'll be like, I don't know what that is. I'm just trying to get to London Bridge Station.
Oh, God. Yeah, but, you know.
I think all you need to do, do you know what? I think you need to sit back, relax, look out the window and just wait for them to go, London Bridge. And then you just hop off and it's fine.
That is true. I will say, this is good. The people who occasionally, when they leave reviews for us and say, why can't you get to the reviews? Why can't you get to the TV? Why is all this nonsense at the top of the show? I'm going to love this stuff. We normally reserve this kind of batch for Pilot Plus. But
do you know what? I'm tempted to just to outline my how I got drenched three times yesterday here in Cambridge, one of which involved me getting a new adapter for the mic, which I left at home. And go to the Apple store in Cambridge. But I won't go on about it and my lack of umbrella as well. So,
God. Guys, we want to get some good reviews. We don't want to
just lost a load of listeners just by this. I apologize to everyone who came here for the top quality TV chat and did not want to hear about my travails with the London bus system. So apologies for that. Let's get on with the podcast proper. And let's begin with what we've been watching. Kay, what have you been watching?
Okay, so I've watched a lot this week. I have watched The Dispatches on Channel 4, which Boyd alluded to at the beginning, which I think a lot of people did, which documented the allegations against Russell Brand of rape and sexual abuse. Found the details incredibly shocking, as I'm sure a lot of people will have done as well. Then I followed it up with some more factual. I watched The Supermodels, which I think, is it on Apple TV Plus?
What's The Supermodels? Is it just what it sounds like?
Yeah, it's a documentary. I think it's four-part documentary about Naomi Campbell, Cindy Crawford, Linda Evangelista, and Christy Turlington. And it's basically about how they dominated the world of modelling and how they got into it and their relationship now. And it's got unprecedented access because they're not often, you know, on camera talking, as you probably know. And so, it just charts all the kind of challenges they face and how it was very, very different back then and the things that were allowed. So yeah, I can highly recommend that if you're interested in those models, because they were like, it was groundbreaking. They were a groundbreaking bunch who, you know, paved the way for all the current models and fashion. So
they're all in the Freedom 90 video, yes, weren't they, for George,
yes,
Michael?
Yes, yes, yes.
Directed by?
Ooh, I don't know who.
James, do you know who directed the Freedom 90 video for George Michael?
Martin Scorsese.
Close. David Fincher.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Good fact.
Good fact. Good fact.
There you go. Hugely influential video.
I've only watched one episode, but maybe they touch upon that in the later episodes.
Absolutely. Oh. They do, yeah. Because I've watched some of it as well. It's really, really good. Yeah, really interesting. Because not only did they just, like, pop culture was obsessed with them as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everything.
And you forget some of the, I mean, like, also they kind of unearth all those archive images and stuff. And you just remember how amazing and arresting those photos and shoots were. So then someone got in touch on Twitter to say I hadn't mentioned about Virgin River. And I have watched, I'd watched a couple of episodes last week or week before for work. And so I kind of like was not half watching it, but you know, when you're not fully focused, it wasn't like my normal viewing. So, and I found it a little... The start, I found it a little underwhelming. That's why I haven't brought it up yet, because I want to... No, still good, but it wasn't like a spectacular first episode, I didn't think. So I want to watch a bit more before I give my fulsome review. But okay. Yeah, I've started watching Virgin River. No, it's still good. But yeah, I want to see how... And there's going to be some dramatic events, because as we know from the trailer, there's going to be a fire. So it is going to ramp up, no doubt. And then the last thing I've watched, which I can't actually review because it's embargoed, and I talked about extensively in Pilot Plus, was the first two episodes of the Frasier reboot.
Oh, yeah.
Cannot review it, and we will.
Neither
do
can Boyd, but that's a whole other story.
that's a reason alone to subscribe to Pilot
Plus.
To
hear Boyd's woes, which involve the Frasier screening and the Continental whiskey that we alluded to earlier.
Yes, Whiskeygate, I'm calling it. But what I will say is, what I will review and I'm allowed to, is the snacks. And just to say, it was a brilliant launch, because they served up scrambled eggs as per the theme tune. They had a jazz band playing a medley of songs, including the theme tune, and they had the illuminated neon sign. And it was just like, it was the perfect kind of launch for it.
Good.
And that's me. That's everything I have been watching.
That's like the second or third time I've heard you discuss the scrambled eggs at the Frasier launch. They must have been really good scrambled eggs. I mean,
they were delicious.
Wow.
It was, no, second time, Pilot Plus and this. Oh, and you got the real version.
I got the personal
when deal. When I spoke to you and I was like, where are you?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Spoiler.
Boydie, have you watched anything exciting?
Yes. Now, I can't remember last week, because obviously my memory, as is evidenced from all the various things, I forget, like, I left the mic at home for this, then I had to go back and get it, then I left the adapter at home.
I felt sorry for you at that stage. I mean,
this has been a series of trials and tribulations. But did I, last week, had I watched all of the morning show? I'm not sure.
No.
I think I'd watched more of it. Then I finished it, because I had to write the review for Empire Online. And I just wanted to say with the morning show, how clever opinions may vary as to the extent to which sometimes some episodes are better than others and some storylines are more involving than others, etc. But it becomes very, very Succession-esque this season of the morning show in terms of...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's kind of built around... And I know you thought my comparison was unfair a couple weeks ago and when we reviewed it, but... Because the storyline of John Hamm's character, this Elon Musk meets the guy, Jeff Bezos figure, his attempted takeover or not of UBS, the fictional network they all work for, becomes the real focus of it. And there's counterclaim and, like, there's, you know, as in Succession, where, you know, it's kind of ebbs and flows as to whether or not the board's going to vote for this takeover, whether, you know, Jennifer Aniston's character is going to go along with it. And it really builds up ahead of steam. And did you remember how in the first season, the brilliant first season, it kind of all the different storyline threads came together to the point where in the finale, it was kind of built around this big centerpiece confrontation and, you know, kind of on-air interview, which, like, blew the whole thing wide open. Do you know what I mean? It kind of all the revelations, if you remember, of the Me Too. They've done a similar thing with this season. So it builds and builds and builds. And the finale is really, is kind of brilliantly, spectacularly exciting and tense. And you just don't know which way it's going to go and how they're going to kind of tie the thing, all the different things up. So I really enjoyed it in the end, but particularly how they So even there might be a storyline. You think, what's the point of this bit? You know, it's kind of, who cares about that? But then it somehow threads in with what happens in the end. It's very clever. It's very cleverly put together, I think.
So safe to say it's back on form for you.
Totally back on form. Yeah. I mean, I think it may never reach the heights of season one because just that was so exciting. But it's definitely like massively, spectacularly entertaining watch every single episode. So I like that very much. I got the Sex Education finale. I don't know if someone on Netflix would be listening to the podcast. Listeners will remember that James was boasting about he'd seen all episodes.
Well, you know.
And I was like, oh, I only got sent 7 out of the 8.
It got very childish.
It got
very fast.
Childish because I particularly don't like, you know, not being first with the with the screeners. And magically they email me going, oh, by the way, we've assigned you the finale for Sex Education. I was like, oh, thanks. Just out of the blue without me even asking.
They realised the error of their ways, yeah. Guido.
Yeah, they heard my pain. And so I watched that, and it is, again, that another show where all the threads, so many subplots and issues and relationships to resolve. And they did that. They handled that superbly, I thought.
To take your word, Boydie, it was a very bold season, yes, of Sex Education. They went to places I didn't think they would go, yeah, with this, and they, yeah, took some big risks with subject matters they've not tackled before, which could have backfired horribly, but they pulled it off really, really well.
Yeah, it's so well thought through.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to give this away because, again, so it, like, obviously we're going out now on Monday. It dropped on Friday, so people will have had the weekend to binge it, and many people probably will have seen the whole season. But just in case they haven't, did you spot the cameo? There is a character. There's a cameo of someone, and again, it's not like a flashy cameo. It's not like a big A-list cameo. But it's not actually a cameo. It's just a bit of casting. So I probably shouldn't use the word cameo because he's not that famous. But there is a character in this series called Dodgy Moe. And so I just think you need to pay attention to the character of Dodgy Moe. There'll be this bit where you're looking at Dodgy Moe and you're like, who are you? Who are you? I know you. Who are you? And then it'll suddenly click who it is.
Is it something we were talking about on Pilot Plus?
I mentioned it then, yes. I mentioned it. It was a bit too early because the show hadn't dropped at that point.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, indeed. Right. I wouldn't have if it hadn't been for you mentioning it, to be honest. Dodgy Moe. Look past the tash
and see the man beneath.
Yeah. It is a wild bit like, oh, how did he get involved?
I thought that was very funny. That made me laugh.
It's really interesting, yeah. And by the way, at this dinner last night here at the Royal Television Society Convention in Cambridge, I sat next to a woman called Steph who had been in the writer's room for Sex Education.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. She's a writer and actor, and she is in a wheelchair, and she was particularly, you know, kind of advising them on the disability issues in the show, which are, I think it's one of the, you know, we were talking about, I think it's one of the best examples on TV of a show that deals with disability, that has visible disabled characters all the way through, and not just like token, you know, ones dropped in here and there, but core to the central storylines as well. So, that was really interesting to meet her. She's brilliant, like really funny. So I watched the Sex Education finale.
While we are talking Sex Education, I should point out, you know, we had some chats about the, I can't actually bring up the post bag at the moment, unfortunately. Otherwise, we had some chats. And remember we mentioned about where is this school, where is it shot and everything? Yeah. Mm. It is, in fact, the Wye Valley in Wales is where it's shot.
Oh, it is Wales.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, I believe, if I'm right in saying, the house that Otis and Jean live in is just over the border in England. I seem to recall the school is in the Wye Valley.
Do they rent it out to punters, or is it just, you know, they're useful?
I would like to live there. Yes, 100%.
Yes. Why don't we all?
We should move in and we do the podcast from that house. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah, we'll see if Bao will pay for that trip. Yeah, unlikely.
Can you imagine the bus journey to get there?
fun times.
I thought that was. I must admit, the countryside is glorious there.
It's an amazing location, yeah. And those cycle rides, the Otis and thingy go on.
Oh, yes. Eric and Otis is cycling to school through this lush forest.
Yeah, they're amazing.
It's glorious.
And one final show that I watched, The Staff, because someone also messaged us, I think, all of us, or maybe just me, I can't remember, on Twitter / X the Extus on X.
Don't call it X. Yeah.
About Taskmaster. Do you know the new series of Taskmaster started last week? Did you see that? Yeah.
No, not Taskmaster. I saw the tweet you're talking about.
Yeah, you saw the tweet. Yeah. Why don't we review Taskmaster, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, actually, do you know what? I'm going to take a look. Because for me, the whole thing about Taskmaster is the lineup, you know, is the lineup. And this lineup, I have to say, is fantastic. It's one of the best lineups they've ever had. So Julian Clary, Sue Perkins, Lucy Beaumont, as in from Meet the Richardsons, who's fabulous. Sam Campbell, who was in Blood, you recognize him, he's really good. And Susan Wacoma. And they are really, really good, I have to say. So I watched the first episode.
I think we should load it up in the cultural exchange canon. So
maybe, we've already.
So I think next is Your Mum, My Dad for James.
Yeah.
And then this one, and then Taskmaster.
Yeah.
How about that?
God.
Yeah. Agreed.
This is the only way I'm going to get you to go through more episodes of Game of Thrones. I should point out, for those of you listening, the first installment of Game of Thrones did happen in the Cultural Exchange in Pilot Plus. So if you want to hear what Kay thought of the first episode of Game of Thrones, do have a listen to that.
Or more importantly, James's verdict on Celebrity Race Across the World.
Oh, God, yes. That's a thing that happened.
By the way, do you know what series this is of Taskmaster?
No.
I'm going to guess 14.
James?
Just
fuck a figure.
Okay. Just name number.
15. I'm going to go.
Close, 16. Oh, okay. 16. Oh. 16 series. How is incredible
It's a winning format.
I genuinely don't even know what the show is about.
You've never watched it?
I couldn't even tell you the premise. I just don't have a clue.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's save that for
we'll
plus.
Save that, Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God. Right. Okay. So things I've been watching, obviously Sex Education I wanted to talk about, but I think that's something that we can go into detail a little bit later on. Maybe we'll do a little special mini Pilot Plus spoiler chat in the next episode and talk about that there. What have I been watching? I've been pressing on very slowly with For All Mankind. I think about 3 episodes away from the end of season 2. I really do need to get a move on because we don't have much time left before
Glacial
the next season
speed,
drops.
James.
Yeah, that's right. I have also been pressing on with The Morning Show, but I haven't finished it yet. So I have nothing to add to what Boyd said because I haven't got to the end, but I'm getting nearer to the end. I will say the most recent episode of Ahsoka, I feel, was basically designed partly around me. So we recorded an Empire spoiler special for this,
God.
Where Amon came on and talked
what
about the animated series that frankly made no sense. But all of that aside, and you know, with your Bridges and your Thrawns and all this stuff that he was explaining what all of this stuff meant, but none of that mattered because there were 2 key takeaways from this episode. Boyd, have you seen it by any chance, the most recent episode?
No.
Okay, well, there is a Dathomiri witch in it, played by Claudia Black, aka Erin Sun from Farscape, and that was immediate. I was like, whoa, it's Claudia Black. There was a stormtrooper called Enoch, and he wears a gold mask. He does not take that mask off, so I did not recognize him at any point. But I looked it up afterwards, and it's Wes Chatham, aka Amos from The Expanse.
Oh, God.
I mean,
yeah.
I want to be excited for you.
Shattering.
I mean, it was pretty exciting for me. I was actually upset that I didn't recognize him from his glorious baritone. But yeah, I didn't recognize him when I was watching it. It was only afterwards. And crucially, I didn't find out till after we recorded the spoiler special. So I shall have to save my excitement for next week when hopefully he takes his helmet off.
Does that mean you'll get kicked out of the Expanse fan club for not recognizing
his voice? It may be, but then I will become president of the Farscape fan club at the same time. So I guess it balances itself out. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, it was a decent episode of Ahsoka. I do feel that show has doubled down on its... if you loved Rebels, you'll love this-ness of it. And I do feel like if you've not watched or have no interest in Rebels, because it's an animation, you might go into this going, I don't know who these people are, and I'm not sure why I should care. I care because it's Star Wars, and I love the tone, and it's quite, you know, it's quite slow, and it's a bit of a mood piece. But I do think they have chosen a very specific subsection of the audience for this show, which seems like, a bold choice, really. So really, Kay, it's aimed at you. People who are au fait with the Rebels series and, of course, the Clone Wars animated series as well. The
next
Dave Filoni
list.
One, of course. Not, and I know what you're thinking. You were thinking, oh, Clone Wars, James. Clone Wars, you mean the Genndy Tartakovsky animation? I said, no, okay, not that one. The Clone Wars, no. Just Dave Filoni's Clone Wars.
Andrei Tarkovsky, the famous Russian film director.
Yes, Boydie. Andrei Tarkovsky, who famously did a Clone Wars animated series. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
That's wild. Wild.
Famously.
Yeah. It was out of character for him. Yeah. Yeah. Completely out of character. But, you know, I guess he just loves Star Wars.
Yeah. We never reviewed it, of course, on this podcast, did we? Because of embargoes and all that.
Yeah, we couldn't see it.
Mm. I mean, you know, Disney Plus, get your finger out. You're missing out here on finding out what we... The Pilot TV Plus podcast. And thought Kay of thought of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, shall we move on to this week's listener question? And this week's listener question is kind of, I guess, slightly topical based on at least one of the shows that we're reviewing this week, and also slightly morbid. So this week's listener question doesn't come from the postbag at all. It comes from Twitter, and it comes from Clive. And Clive says, thanks for the latest pod. It really made me lol. You're welcome, Clive. Listener question. The three of you are going to be brutally murdered. Which Ooh. Team of TV detectives do you choose to prevent slash solve the case?
Oh, too easy.
Oh?
We didn't even get this question in advance, but straight
up. Yes, you
did.
I sent it to you yesterday. You just both ignored it.
No, I saw it.
Oh.
Okay, it was on the, I mean, to be fair to James, I mean, he's not great at communication at the best of times, but he did actually send
You're
this
brave.
To us.
Very, very brave boy.
He did actually send this to us on the chat, on the WhatsApp. How did you see it?
I'm actually checking.
See, this is the whole thing, and I'm going to stand up right here and say, like, I get accused of not having good communication, despite having a pilot WhatsApp, despite having at least four separate pilot calendars. I could not be more organised, but you guys just look at it.
Listen, on this occasion, I was wrong, and I apologise. There was a message that I didn't see.
Recorded that audio and could send me the file, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. Do you just automatically dismiss any message now that James sends?
I've got this nerd chat filter on there, and it just gets sifted out. And I think he got like caught up in that. Anyway, straight away, my answer, obviously, Poirot.
Of course.
I would get him to solve the crime because he would do it. He would do it in a very elegant fashion. There would be no, you know, fuss or bother. He would just employ his little grey cells. And yeah, that's immediately my answer.
So, I mean, the question did ask for a team of detectives, though. So,
well, I mean, well, I like to think one-man team.
Well, he can bring Hastings just for the lols. Captain Hastings, who does actually very, very little, but like bumble along and cause irritation for Poirot. So, yeah.
Yeah, true.
Fair enough. Who would you choose?
I mean, it's got to start with Columbo, really. You know, it just,
one more
Columbo's
thing.
Columbo's the OG. It all started with Columbo.
See, you say
did it, or
that.
Poirot. I think Poirot came first.
Well, in terms of TV detectives. Well, go on, James. Why am I wrong?
The thing with Columbo is it's like, it's not about who done it, it's how they done it. You know,
yeah, but
how
still,
they didn't, you know.
I know, but he still solves the fucking crimes.
But then I suppose to have Columbo solve your murder, we would have to sit through your murder happening.
Yeah.
We'd have to watch Boydie being live murdered before Columbo could solve it.
Yeah, it would be exciting though.
How would Boyd be murdered?
In the streets of Bermondsey by assassins is 100% how it would.
I think it should be something.
That's too close to the truth, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, I think it should be something TV related. Like
his massive TV falls on him and crushes him.
Oh my God, yes, that's it. Yeah. But it's been loosened. The hinge has been loosened by someone.
100%. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Solved this already, it was easy.
Yeah. James, out of all of us, I'm not going to target Boyd.
Oh, wow. I heard the threat in that.
Sleep with one eye open.
Always.
Oh, God. So, yeah, I'd start with Cullen, but I'd also bring in Sherlock. Benedict Cumberbatch
as
Sherlock.
Yeah,
that's a good shout.
He's genius. And so, because I've got the indefatigability of Columbo, because Columbo won't give up. He's
tenacious.
He's very tenacious. Yeah. And then you've got just the pure genius of Sherlock, who can, you know, fathom what's going on from like a speck of dust on a shirt or whatever.
And are you having Watson as well, or just Sherlock flying solo, just out of interest?
Yeah, you'd have Watson as well.
Okay.
Watson's very good, very useful, yeah. And this is, to be really wanky, how about this? I was thinking, oh, you know what? Because even though I can't review it or anything because of embargoes, I'm going to say Emma Corrin as Darby Hart. Yes, the amateur sleuth at the centre of A Murder at the End of the World, coming soon on Disney Plus, created by Zalbach Mangledge and Brett Marling. Yeah.
Wow.
That's a good shout.
The central character. Thanks. Even though you haven't seen it. No one's seen it.
Look at how smug he is there. Mm. Obviously, my answer does remain Poirot, but I also feel like not having Angela Lansbury in there is a bit of a mistake.
Yeah, Poirot with Marple.
Yeah,
great,
maybe with... Not Marple. No.
What's her name?
Jessica Fletcher.
Jessica Fletcher, yeah, sorry. Clearly based on Marple.
Okay, I'm gonna combine her. I'm gonna have her with him. Hmm. Fine. James, who are you choosing?
Well, if you wanted to mix up the Columbo format, I'd go with Natasha Lyonne from Poker Face, because I think she does what Columbo does, but does it in a much more entertaining fashion. So,
God, bellend.
True. But the question I would have for you two is: would you want Mabel, Oliver, and Charles to make a podcast about your murder after the fact?
No.
Oh, do you know what?
Yes.
My answer is a resounding no.
No.
No. They can barely keep their shit together for what the crime they're solving at the moment. Like, no, I think I'd want you and Boyd to dress all in black for at least a year and to record a podcast just trying to solve my murder.
Only for Pilot Plus subscribers.
Only, oh my God, only once we reach 5,000 reviews.
Exclusive. Yeah.
Right.
We hit 5,000 reviews, all have to be 5-star, obviously, and maybe mourning my loss. And then I want you to, dressed in black, and Darren, even though we don't see him, has to be dressed in black as well. And then, doing a separate series on this crime.
So just to be clear, what you are promising subscribers is if we reach 5,000, if we hit that, we will arrange to have you brutally murdered.
No, that's the
end. And they will help us solve the crime.
Okay, now you've got your own agenda, and I think everyone can see that. And it was reviews and subscribers, but we'll iron out those details.
It was a bit like a game of Cluedo. It was Boyd in the Bermondsey with the angry ferret or something. I don't know. Okay, fine. But none of these work for me, really. So I kind of toyed with a few ideas for this, as is my wont. I thought, maybe Lufa. Because if someone were to murder me, I'd want Lufa to basically kill them, because that's what he does. You know what I mean? Like, Lufa would just go in there and just mess them up. So Joe would be too good for them. I'd want Lufa to like throw them off a building or something. So that would work. Or crucially, the late great Robbie Coltrane as Fitz from Cracker, so he could grind them into an intellectual pulp in the interrogation room. I'd quite like that.
Yeah, Fitz is very you. Yeah, that's
just
true.
Pompous and just like, I'd quite like that. I think that would work for me. But ultimately, and then I toyed with, do I want Lester Freeman from The Wire investigating? Because the man is methodical, the man is relentless, he never lets it go, and he's not showy, but he gets the job done. I thought he'd be a good choice. But ultimately, I thought, do you know what? Not being murdered is probably the best outcome from this. So my choice for this, and again, it's cheating slightly because it's not aired here in the UK, but I have seen it, is Brian Tyree Henry from Class of 09.
You beat me. What? You beat me. What? I thought, of course, I thought I was being particularly smug by referring to a murder at the end of it, but no.
You've
pulled. You've been outsmugged.
Yeah, been outsmugged. Yeah, 100%. Because obviously story is around the kind of, it goes into the Minority Report territory, where it's essentially arresting people for crimes they have yet to commit. And I would like my murderer to be arrested, frankly, before they murder me. So.
Can I
just hear police siren
yeah
now.
They're on the way yeah. And then outside, also it's coming out of Kay's microphone, so it speaks fucking volumes. That does.
Can I tweak my answer a little bit? I've just, when I said Hastings with Poirot, I now actually want to change Hastings' identity to Ted Hastings. Exactly, that as a bastion of morality, I think he needs to be on board with Poirot and Jessica Fletcher.
They really are closing
in
on
the UK.
I can hear them.
I know they're coming
it's
to
the,
you
no it's the pre-crime unit. They're coming to arrest you preemptively for my murder, a la Minority Report.
Listen, I can't reveal who else is involved. Some Pilot Plus subscribers. We're a team.
I don't want to know. Okay, this is good. Any others you'd like to throw in? Mulder and Scully. See, Kay, I always think that if you were to be murdered, it would definitely be like an alien or a ghost or like a vampire or something supernatural, just to spite you for not liking that genre.
He really thought this through.
Yeah, he's given this an inordinate amount of thought.
Yeah. I'm a professional. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I've just reacted to the question based on what I've just seen, because I've only just got the message.
Yeah.
Only just been delivered. And you've given it like lots and lots of thought.
I think if Luther was investigating, that would mean that we were the victims of a particularly perverse serial killer.
Oh, that's true.
Who obviously targeted bald, middle-aged white guys who review TV for a living. So that would be an interesting storyline, I think.
Yeah, that would be a good twist.
Yeah. Kay, you not might pointing, be the murderer, Kay.
Yeah, well, that's it. And she clearly is. So, Kay, just obviously you're not pointing the finger in any libelous way, but were you a serial killer, how would you murder us?
Oh, my God, that's a great... Well, I'm going to need a bit more time, but I wouldn't do anything too showy. And I would do it in a very slow way.
Wow.
Maybe I'd... Particularly with James, I'd like to drive him mad along the way.
I would have thought, yeah. It's obvious, it's got to be an exploding microphone, surely. Like, you know, just when James is sorting out his levels and being a fascist about the sound audio, mic blows up and kills it.
Oh, yeah, so you'd attach the explosives to like the little level gauge. So when I'm being particularly funny with the trimming, that's it.
It detonates, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Head explodes.
And the headphones as well.
Yeah,
but boy, I think the TV idea is quite good for Boydo.
Yeah, my TV falling on me. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Death by its 90 inch or whatever. Yeah.
Steady, yeah.
What would I, you know what? Poetic justice. I think Kay would die. I would poison her cookies.
Ooh.
Poison the cookies that wrongly robbed me of my title during the Great Pilot TV Bake Off.
Mm.
You know what that would do? That would expose your bitterness at my win.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't use a bitter poison, Kay? Because obviously you'd taste it. I'd choose something that had no flavour.
That's very Agatha Christie. I would approve of you poisoning me.
Lemon drizzle poison.
That's right. The lemon drizzle poisoner. That's what they could call me. That could be my name. Mm. Yeah. No, that would be a better way of doing it. Rather than poison your cookie, I could poison my own lemon drizzle cake and then send it to you.
God. Look at this. Yeah. He's so
I'm excited. Really excited about it.
Listeners, I can't tell you the excitement. His eyes are gleaming as if this is an actual thing that's going
to
happen.
Put it this way. The next Pilot Live podcast is going to be wild.
Yeah. You're going to be like, who wants to taste a lemon drizzle? I'm going to, no. Oh, amazing. Right. I think that is enough for this week's listener question. Right.
Now, can I...
Hang on. I have to do the post baggy bit. If you want to have your question read out on the Pilot TV podcast, do send them to us at Pilot TV Pod via DM on Twitter or Instagram, or to me at James C. Dyer on Instagram. Sorry, Kay, what were you saying?
I just need to confess something now because I've just realised I have forgotten... to find any news. That's it. I'm just getting out of the way. Brilliant. That's it.
Kate's forgotten to find news. Boyd hasn't watched one of the shows. This is extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's very early is what I would say.
It is early. It is an early morning record when we may or may not have had a lot of sleep. But that's all good. That is all good. So, I mean, you mentioned news. It is time for the news section. I won't go straight to Kay. Boyd, do you have some news?
Yeah, of course. I'm picking out the thing that you must have been most excited about, I would have thought, that was revealed this week. You know what I'm talking about? Can you guess?
Can I guess?
You've been asking about this for weeks, and your question was answered finally.
Well, I mean, we covered the interview with the vampire stuff, so it can't be.
No, it's going to be something. When are we going to get?
Exactly. What show has he been asking about?
Oh, of course. Yes. See, I suppose because I already knew this information, it didn't strike me as news. Yes, you're absolutely right. Slow Horses has to say, and it's the 1st of December.
Correct. Yes. Friday the 1st of December.
That is exciting. Although I have one question.
Go on.
Where's the other one? Last year, we got two seasons of Slow Horses. A season.
Just be grateful. Why can't you be grateful for anything, okay? You've got some good news there, and now you're already jumping to wanting more.
I am extremely excited that Slow Horses is coming back, and that's going to be with us on the 1st of December, even if it is only one season and not two, which I was owed.
I think last time they dropped the first season, and then... they dropped the second quite quickly without making a big fanfare. They were like, oh, and here's the second.
Yeah, so I think one dropped in April, and then the next one dropped around Christmas time. And it was two in a year. This is amazing.
Yeah, so maybe they'll drop this one at December the 1st, and then the next one will be a couple of months later, and you'll be fine.
December the 2nd?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's unlikely, but... how long have the previous seasons been, by the way?
About six episodes, aren't they?
Oh, okay, yeah, this is six.
They're not super long.
Yeah. Mm. I thought they might have been shorter than that. I thought this season might have been longer. Anyway, it's based on The Real Tigers, the third novel in the Mick Harron spy series, Slough spy series. It's going to arrive on Friday, December the 1st, and it's going to be very exciting and fantastic.
Yes.
And yeah. Chope de Risu's in it. That's the thing.
That is also true, yes.
Yes. He is cast as Sean Donovan, the former head of security at the British Embassy in Istanbul. And Catherine Waterston plays Alison Dunn, an MI5 agent who uncovers a dark secret at the heart of the agency. So, yes, fantastic. Slow Horses news. Well done, everyone.
So I have to say, Slow Horses is one of the most bingeable shows. I absolutely love it and devour it. So this is very, very exciting.
And you have been watching it on the Apple screens, of course.
I can neither confirm nor deny such an accusation.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, there was an announcement of a new Vicky McClure show. Did you see this?
I did see this, yes.
Paramount Plus is getting in the Vicky McClure business in a big way. She's also executive producer. And she it's a show called Insomnia, and she plays successful career woman Emma, who fears she might be losing her mind when her hard-won dream life turns out to be a nightmare. A couple of weeks before her 40th birthday, she stopped sleeping, just as her mother had done before she suffered a violent psychotic breakdown.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Emma's mother always told her she'd go the same way, and she has the same bad blood. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's interesting. And her husband is going to be played by Tom Cullen, who's a brilliant actor. That's very exciting. He's very good. So, yeah, I'm fully up for this Vicky McClure-based Paramount Plus series.
As am I. Enjoyed the fact that you were dropping a few Taylor Swift lyrics in there as well. So that was good.
Of course.
I have some news, and it is Star Trek related. Jonathan Frakes, a.k.a. Commander William Riker, has said that the fifth and final season of Star Trek Discovery is going to return to its roots as sci-fi television, heavily focused on action and adventure. Now, Kay, obviously, you're probably slightly behind on Star Trek Discovery, but the...
I mean, it's a total zoner over
here. The fourth season, of course, did not explore action and adventure. Instead, was a sort of a philosophical musing on the meaning of tedium. So that's useful. So this is a bold new sort of change of direction for the show. So I welcome it.
All I'm hearing is tedium.
That's all you ever hear from me.
Yeah.
Yes, I did not enjoy the most recent season of Discovery, and Strange New Worlds has very much eclipsed it in my Star Trek love at the moment. But yeah, I'm psyched that they seem to be doing a little bit of a course correction.
Yeah, good Star Trek disco news. Yeah.
Oh, good. Gassy boy. Boyd knows the lingo.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
You do.
I know the lingo. Yeah. There was an announcement of another a show coming up on Netflix that Kay and I are excited about. I know. That many listeners will be excited about. But of course, James probably won't be because of his fierce opposition to popular culture.
Right.
And stuff. But Netflix confirmed that their David Beckham documentary series.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Is going to arrive on the 4th of October. And this will be interesting whether we decide to review this or not on the show, because this is a big deal. This is a big news. It's like, you know, been years in the making. It's the first time.
Oh, we have to do it, surely. Come on.
We'll see.
Let's bring down the dictator.
I literally haven't said a word.
But hold on. Let me.
Your face says it all.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. Your face does say it all. But the interesting thing about it is that it's four episodes. It's the first time he's really, him and Victoria, his wife, James, you may not have heard of her, a.k.a. Posh Spice.
Right.
It's not only the story of his incredible success as a footballer, it also looks at him as a cultural icon and them together as a celebrity icon as well. So it actually looks at, you know, their whole kind of like, the level of celebrity they achieved as a couple in the heady days when, and I think I'll be surprised if, you know, kind of Heat and our role in helping make them famous isn't somehow alluded. I've no idea. I haven't watched it yet. They haven't seen the episodes.
Is this been made by Fullwell?
No, it hasn't been made by Fullwell. No.
Oh, okay.
It's been made by another company that I think it's been co-produced by Gary Neville, who's obviously friends with Beckham, etc. But you know what? Here's the interesting thing that might be the way in for James is, do you know who's directed this documentary series, James? Of course you don't.
Martin Scorsese.
Close. Neither Martin Scorsese nor David Fincher, but it has been directed by Fisher Stevens.
Oh my God. Oscar winner Fisher Stevens,
Oscar
I should
winner,
say.
Fisher Stevens, who plays the oily PR guy in Succession.
Oh.
Yes. You know that man.
Yes.
James is officially perked up.
I know Fisher Stevens. And anyone who's ever seen Short Circuit 2 knows Fisher Stevens.
Yeah.
But the less said about that, the better, okay. I would say.
Fair enough.
But yes, I remember the year that he won an Oscar when I was just like, what is happening?
I know. Yeah, it's bizarre. But it's bizarre, isn't it? He's directed this documentary series.
Yes, he is actually a very good director.
He is a documentarian.
Yes.
So he plays Hugo in Succession. Hugo, who is one of... remember when we went to the... Succession writers event at the Royal Festival Hall. Someone picked out, it might have been Jesse Armstrong, his favourite.
It was.
Yeah. Go on.
If there was a character, they'd do a spin off.
That's right. Yeah. They did pick out at the event the fact that they could do a spin off series from Succession built around his character. Yeah. His incredibly oily, unctuous PR guy who kind of moves with it, goes with the flow and tries to stay in his role. But he's dismissed summarily in the finale. So, yeah. But anyway, bottom line is Beckham, the series, arrives on the 4th of October on the Netflix. Be excited, James.
This is my excited face.
Yeah. Okay.
Well. I know you guys are as excited as I am about the new Netflix Scott Pilgrim animated series.
Oh, yeah.
And the creator of the comic, Brian Lee O'Malley, has been talking a little bit about that, specifically why it is a new thing. So it's not a complete retelling, you know, word for word or whatever you want to call it, of his original comic. It's not an adaptation of the movie, although it does involve all of the movie's cast. It's essentially I suppose it's like, because he wrote the comic 20 years ago, and I think his whole point is he couldn't go back and rewrite it. So he wanted to tell the story of Scott Pilgrim in a world where the story of Scott Pilgrim has already been told. So I thought that was kind of, it's a mad idea. I quite like the idea of it. And yeah, I'm into it. I'm quite excited to watch it. Even though it is animated, and my snobbishness around that medium, you know, notwithstanding.
I love Scott Pilgrim. It's one of my favorite films of that era. So yeah, even I, again, anti or just not that popular animation.
Animation, is that a thing? Can we say that?
Yeah, animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, very excited about any Scott Pilgrim related stuff.
So that's good. And the drama surrounding Kevin Costner and Yellowstone seems to show sign of abating. So there's all the sort of his divorce hearings, hasn't it? Has been talking about, you know, why he isn't in it, what's going on, why he's kicking off with Taylor Sheridan. Apparently there has been a report, possibly a rumor, that he is asking to come back for season five or towards the end of season five.
So they must have, so they've ironed out all the financial issues.
Well, no, I still don't know that it's happening because this is all like this anonymous sources kind of rumored type reporting. But they're saying, oh, he's begging to come back. And then someone else is saying that it came with a list of demands, including more money, didn't want to shoot as much, and he wanted the right to review and approve all of the scripts for the show. And bear in mind that Sheridan writes every episode.
That should be a hard no.
I believe it was a hard no, so I don't know where this is going. But whether or not his character, John Dutton, returns to Yellowstone remains to be seen. But, you know, it could happen, might not happen.
Maybe I'm going to start doing this for the podcast. I'm going to insist that you send me all the intros and the links before we record.
Yeah, and your veto. Say, no, this pun is rubbish. No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I don't approve of this joke. Too much bus chat at the top half of the podcast. Cut it out. Yeah. You would 100% do that. And then you see when we get to, if you'd see my script here, it says news section, square bracket, K brings no news.
Oh, God. Oh. I know. It is true. I mean, I can only apologize. I don't know what happened. Just completely forgot.
But what I do is I respect your commitment to the bit in that, you know, another person, a lesser person, one might say, would have come with no news and would have taken the opportunity to, I don't know, Google some news while me and Boyd were talking. But no. K doubled down on this and looked out of the window most of the time that we were talking. And I respect that.
I looked out the window because I was absorbing your news and also trying not to be blinded by the sun.
That's what was happening.
But yeah. Yeah. I take my commitment to having no news very seriously,
James.
Yeah, no, I
appreciate it. I think, you know.
I don't want to just bring any old,
follow through.
Shabby news.
Go for it.
Mm. And, well, I'm not going to follow through, that's for sure.
Yeah. God. We should say, by the way, sorry to stop all this general waffle, but...
wow. That's going to be the title of the next review on Apple Podcasts. It's just going to be general waffle.
Well, there is quite important news, which is that the writers... strike people, the WGA are having talks with the studio people, so there is some hope there that at least one of the two strikes that is ruining our lives and ruining more importantly ruining people who work in the industry lives in may be resolved, it's promising.
But when you say they're having talks, is it like fuck you, no fuck you, no fuck you, is that the kind of conversation they're having?
Maybe
that seems to be largely what the talks have been so far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not privy to the room. I haven't got a fly on the wall. But we have got the real bigwigs: Bob Iger, Ted Sarandos of Netflix, David Zaslav, the controversial new head honcho of Warner Bros. Discovery. They are people in the room with the WGA. So, you know, it's pretty high level talks. So it's promising, I think. And fucking yeah, we really need these strikes to stop.
We really do.
So, yeah.
A lot of things getting pushed back. And, you know, it's funny because we haven't really felt the pain of the strikes yet, really. But let me rephrase that. We have, because we try to interview people and fail because they're on strike. But like, people watching films and TV haven't really felt the pain of it, except for those people who were really expecting Dune to arrive in November. But it's when we get into next year and we realize how much stuff is being pushed back. And even like the, you know, the fall TV season in the US has kind of started to slip as well. So I think we're very close to the point where we are very much going to start feeling this.
Yeah.
Obviously, the people on strike who have not been paid for months are feeling this already. I'm 100% sympathetic to them. But I'm just saying it's going to feel real for those of us on the ground before too long. Although we could take the opportunity to go to the theatre. And there's a wonderful segue into the fact that Stranger Things, The First Shadow, is a prequel play based on the popular TV series on Netflix. And this is going to start, it's starting doing previews in November at the Phoenix Theatre in London. If you've been on the Underground recently, you will have seen some posters for it, advertising it. So I think it opens properly on December the 14th. And I'm very, very fascinated to see this. They cast some younger versions of the characters that we know and love. I think Hopper's in it, Joyce is in it, you know, all of that. Henry Creel and the Hawkins kids. Well, other parents, the parents of the Hawkins kids, not the actual Hawkins kids. But yeah, because it's like a prequel story.
Yeah, I am genuinely intrigued to see how it works on stage. Yeah, it's quite a bizarre. It's just one of the weirder things to make it to the stage, isn't it? Like,
it is. You know, yeah. It's a strange thing, but I'm here for it.
It's a strange thing. Strange thing.
Yeah. It is a strange thing. Indeed. That was completely unintentional as well.
I know. It made it even better.
Yeah. Kay, I know the answer to this question before I ask it. Are you by any chance a Stranger Things fan?
So maybe don't ask.
Well, no, because I feel like it, Stranger Things has crossed boundaries, right? Like, it doesn't feel like it's just for nerds. It feels like it's something that has crossed over and lots of people watch it, even the normies such as yourself. So, you know, you were never tempted?
I'm not anti it. I just haven't engaged with it.
Okay. And so I think you might enjoy it. You might enjoy it. It's like a bit of 80s
fun. Well, one step at a time. You know, You just started Game of Thrones. You're right.
Let's not drop you in the deep end. Let's do it bit by bit.
Yeah.
Let's move on to a little bit of news that maybe will be a closer to your backyard. And it is.
get away from my backyard.
Steady.
What? Follow me. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. I should definitely not be investigating your backyard, but let's talk about Colin from Accounts.
I'm going to rip my ears off.
Colin from Accounts has got an air date in the US. Colin from Accounts, it's like the Eras tour. It's like Taylor Swift. It's very, very slowly doing its tour of the globe. But it is arriving on Paramount Plus on November 9th.
Oh, but you know, the only news I actually care about is, and I know it's ridiculous, it's going to be far off because they haven't even written it, but like, I'm desperate to know if we're going to get it in 2024.
Well, that is the question, isn't it? I mean, they have renewed it, so I'm going to hope we do. But, you know, maybe it'll be the same sort of thing where Australia will get it in the summer, we'll get it next Christmas, and then America will get it sometime in 2025 because they are doing a world tour.
I'd be happy with that. That's a great Christmas present.
Yeah, it's not a bad one, is it?
/ birthday present for Boyd and me.
Yes, indeed. And me as well. Thanks very much.
You December
all
baby.
Of our birthdays are around the same time. We should have a joint party. Oh, yeah. Do you know what we're going to do? We're going to let's hire out the sex education house and have a party, a joint triple birthday party.
I mean, it's
party.
Ambitious to think that we're going to fill that house with people. But us three can definitely go. We'll have to have a joint party, all of us, all three of us.
All close together. And I think since we're reeling off birthdays, that probably marks the end of news, doesn't it? So let's move on to the reviews.
Oh, it's a bit of a
shambolic
episode, but please do leave your 5-star reviews.
Yes. Please do leave your 5-star reviews for General Waffle. First up this week, we have The Long Shadow. Now, this is a 7-part ITVX drama based on Michael Bilton's book, Wicked Beyond Belief. And this one sees Toby Jones on the hunt for Peter Sutcliffe, otherwise known as the Yorkshire Ripper, but crucially, not here. Isn't that right, Boydie?
Yes. When this project was originally announced, actually, it was going to have the Yorkshire Ripper in the title. That was kind of the working title. And then what happened was when the creators of the show, George Kay, who's written it, and Lewis Arnold, who's directed it, started doing their research for the show and started, you know, preparing for it in earnest, they realized that the relatives of the victims of Peter Sutcliffe are very, very anti him being known as the Yorkshire Ripper. They feel like it kind of, you know, it almost glamorizes him, as you know, which obviously it does. So they've removed all reference to the Yorkshire Ripper, certainly from there, from the title. It is, you do see references to the newspapers that covered Peter Sutcliffe at the time, but that's all you see of that phrase, the Yorkshire Ripper. And they asked us, journalists covering the series, to not refer to him as the Yorkshire Ripper, which I think is fair enough, you know. It's perfectly valid to explain why we're not calling him the Yorkshire Ripper.
I did not get that note, but okay, good to know.
Interesting, yeah. So it does tell the story of Peter Sutcliffe, the serial killer, who was operating in the 70s. And the other thing about it is you don't really see much of him either. So he's kind of very much in the shadows. You kind of are aware of him as a figure, and you kind of get to see, you know, the kind of impact that he's had on these women and their relatives, and their and it's extraordinarily powerful. But again, the focus is very much on the victims and on the police investigation. And part of the reason for that is that this was an investigation that went on for 5 years. It went through various detectives, lead detectives worked on the case, various other people were assigned to the case, people were taken off the case, moved to different areas of the police. But it's definitely an investigation that was marred by loads of mistakes, often driven by and failures among the police, often driven by the prejudices of the time and the assumptions of the time. I think I've watched a few episodes of it. It begins with, it also highlights the effect that it has on the children of these women who are victims of the Yorkshire Ripper. And the very first scene, I think really importantly and interestingly, the whole 7-part series kicks off with a montage of news coverage from 1975 when it starts, showing how the kind of state Britain was in, a bit of a broken, you know, state, and unemployment was rife. The economy was terrible, kind of similar with echoes to how it is now.
Oh, you know, very much deliberately in the way it's framed.
Very much deliberately, the cost of living crisis, etc. And so, because I think another part of the big story of the narrative of Peter Sutcliffe is that his victims were, in heavy quotes, prostitutes, sex workers or whatever. And what this production brilliantly does is it shows the human reality behind that tag of prostitute or sex worker or whatever freight you want to use your tool. But these are three-dimensional human beings who were so desperate that they resorted to that line of work because they felt they didn't have any other option. And that's particularly dramatized right at the beginning, and also through his first victim, and also throughout particularly episode 1 and 2 with Catherine Kelly's character, Emily Jackson, who's his second victim. And we get to see her home life with her husband, played by Daniel Mays, and they agree together this awful decision they make that she is going to resort to sex work because they're in desperate stakes at home and they haven't got any money. And I just thought it was so moving right from the start that it foregrounds these people and explains what it would have been like for them, life would have been like for them. And it completely obliterates the cliches and stereotypes of sex workers and women and the women who were the victims of Peter Sutcliffe. So I think it starts, as it needs to go on, by being a very humane, nuanced, and yet really powerful, grim, necessarily grim. I mean, there's one scene with Catherine Kelly
do you know what? That's the scene that I was going to highlight. It's the most affecting scene.
I mean, it is. It's horrendous, isn't it, to watch, Billy? But it has to be done.
I agree with everything you said. I really, really think it's such a good decision that they're not focusing on him. They don't allude to him really or mention him or glamorize him in any way. And this is all about the victims. And I think the fact that they have focused so heavily on the victims, their families, but also the desperation they had during this time because of their financial constraints. And this is completely epitomized with Catherine Kelly's character, Emily, and her desperation to provide for her kids. And I just thought it was so interesting, the dynamic she has with her husband, Daniel Mays, who plays Sydney, who's doing very little to improve their financial situation. And the fact that they come to this decision, and it's not one that, I mean, to be fair, he's not really on board with it. I mean, he does in the end have to come around to it to a certain extent, and extraordinarily like drives her to the pub to have these sort of meetings. But she's just, it's the desperation she feels to do that, to provide much needed money for the kids. And as you say, there's this scene in the back of the van, her husband's van, she's driven her to meet up with this punter. And it's so, the scene that we're talking about is so brilliantly done that it completely just embodies, encapsulates her pain and what she's putting herself through, the sacrifice for her kids.
Yeah, completely. And then there's another in, because I've watched, I think, 3 episodes now. I obviously, as is ever my case with me, I forget to make notes of what happens in which episode. But there's another really important character who is Marcella Claxton, who was attacked by Peter Sutcliffe when she was 20 years old, but she survived. So she was one of the survivors. So he said there was a few women who were attacked by him who survived. And she's still alive now, played by Jasmine Lee Jones. And she's a black woman who was basically, her story was dismissed by the police because she was black and they just didn't believe her. The way this series, I think, deals with the police errors and filters that through the attitudes of the time is so clever. And it's done in such a non-heavy-handed way, if you like, that, you know, it's not kind of like, it's done in a very nuanced, intelligent way, is what I would say. And the other thing is, the mixture of diligence and intelligence and foregrounding the victims and making a show that is, as it has to be, because it's a primetime TV drama, in heavy quotes, you know, gripping and entertaining, is, you know, we've talked about this before with true crime dramas. They have to be, you know, they have to grip us and they have to be. And this one is so well made in terms of the script written by George Kay, who we know from Hijack fame and Litvinenko and Lupin. I'm a huge fan of his work. And the way it's written by him and the way it's directed by Lewis Arnold, who's, you know, did Time, Sherwood, Dez, he's a brilliant director. It's very cinematic in a kind of, but in a very low key, subtle way. The atmosphere that's created of dread in the show is brilliant. So yeah, it's a story that you could say, why now? You know, why are they telling this story now of the most famous British serial killer in history? You know, is it just for exploitative reasons? Is it to climb aboard the true crime bandwagon? I think you could think that might be the case, but then when you watch the show, you watch the series, you realize it's making some really important points about what the police were like at the time and still are now, echoing now to what's happening now with the Met, etc. The attitudes of the time, the failures, and what it was like and the impact it had, as in the title, The Long Shadow, for the victims and their families.
Question, Boydo, because you went to the launch, didn't you?
Yeah.
Of this? This has been made with permission and of the victims' families, right?
Yeah, it's been made with the involvement of a lot of the victims' families. Yeah, a lot, right, of input, a lot of discussion, a lot of interviews with the victims' families. Yeah, absolutely. Not, you know, it varies, but yeah, certainly with a lot of them. Yeah,
because overall, it feels very respectful to them.
Yeah,
you know,
completely.
It is. It's quite harrowing. It's the only thing that I will sort of add to this. I mean, you guys have touched on this well. That scene in particular that you reference was exceptionally difficult to watch. But exactly as you say, like what this does is it explores the victims and it kind of portrays them as rounded characters. You see their lives. They're not sort of faces on a police pinboard, right? Like you actually understand who they are and what they're doing. And it humanizes them to such an extent that it makes this, I think, a lot more harrowing than similar kind of serial killer stories. And it hits extremely hard. I will say Danny Mays and Catherine Kelly are really, really good in this. And even the domestic drama that they go through is pretty upsetting. You know, it's really difficult to be in that kind of poverty where you're really, really, where you have to essentially, when she has to turn to sex work when she has no other option.
The innocence of the children as well, as they're unwrapping the presents, so delighted with what they've been, you know, given, and you see the pain of what it's, how that money's been, how it's come about.
Yeah. There's a very particular look that the two parents share during that scene, which I thought was extremely well done. Also worth noting that how this series begins, as you said, Boyd, it starts with a kind of the scene setting, talking about the, you know, the cost of living crisis that we're going through at the time. But also it begins with two children at a bus stop. And so rather than the narrative, which it has to be said, these similar stories often take, which is prostitute is murdered. You know, that's normally the narrative. It's mother of two children is murdered. And it's just that, and it's an important thing, because I think oftentimes with these stories, whether they be true crime or whether they be fictional, you do have this thing where victims are reduced to just that, just a victim, you know, not a person, not someone who has children, who has dependents, who has a life, you know, who was a complex, varied, vibrant person. You know, they were more than just their line in the newspaper. And I think this does an excellent job of doing that. And I wonder how much of that exists in the original book, which is Michael Bilton's Wicked Beyond Belief, which I have not read, and how much of it, you know, was from the input from the victims' families who were obviously involved.
Oh, I think I went to the launch where the writer was there, and I think it is a mixture of both. Yeah, I think the book is key, but I think they conduct a lot of interviews and discussions with a lot of the relatives of the victims. Yeah, so I think it is a mixture of both.
Okay. Well, The Long Shadow debuts on ITVX. When, Boydie?
ITV1.
Does it now?
Yeah, Monday, today, as this goes out. Showing, airing weekly, yeah, on ITV1, 9 o'clock.
Okay. Next up, we have the return of Terry White favourite, Brassic. This is Joe Gilgan and Danny Brocklehurst's comedy on Sky, which sees Vinnie O'Neill and his friends committing petty crime and generally causing carnage in the fictional town of Hawley. Now, Kay, instead of a pun, I'm going to start you with a fact. So, Brassic is Cockney rhyming slang for being skint, right? We all know this. But it comes from boracic lint. So, boracic lint skint, which was, and a boracic lint was a medical dressing made from surgical lint that is soaked in a hot, saturated solution of boracic acid and glycerin and then left to dry. And it's been used since the 19th century, though, to be fair, not so much now. And it was commonly used to treat leg ulcers.
Right.
Listen, all I would say to listeners is if nothing inspires you to leave that 5-star review, it's the fact that you get these nuggets of information.
There you go.
As well as your reviews. I like that.
Who doesn't like a bit of leg ulcer chat? Leg ulcers, I would say, are significantly less fun than watching this show. Did that prove to be the case? Kay.
Amazing.
I'm a bit like Terry. I'm a big fan of this show and the writing of Joe Gilgan and Danny Brocklehurst. And this is series 5. So we, you know, we're very much embedded with these characters. But for anyone who doesn't watch, it's about a sort of a gang of misfits, the working class misfits who are trying to scrape and earn a living, usually through petty crime, led by Vinny, played by Joe Gilgan. And this time round, so at the end of last season, we saw that they lost a valued member of their team, Dylan, aka Dildo, played by Damon Maloney, who was bundled into the back of a boot by some thugs. So he's still MIA. Vinny's pining for him. No one knows where he's gone, but they are distracted by, you guessed it, some more crimes. This time in particular, they are stealing a lorry load of cars in transit, which it's organized through one of Vinny's associates who decides it's an easy target. They're going to do this. The transit van is being driven by none other than Boyd's favorite, Lee Mack, who is wonderful in this role. He's the hapless driver who becomes embroiled in this heist. And there's some laxatives, long story short, it's dramatic and it's messy. There's also a birth. I just love this show because, I mean, you know what you're going to get. It's madcap. It's funny. You're buying into these group of friends who, you know, are obviously wrong-uns, but you kind of like them. I mean, I like them at least. I think particularly Joe Gilgan's character, Vinny, he's a sweetheart. And that seems weird to say because they're doing such awful things, but he's always got such heart to him. Like he'll never go beyond a certain limit. And he always is trying to help people out, you know, and generate money, much needed money. But it is just generally, it's full of heart. I think when they deal with the storylines, we don't see it particularly in this first episode, but when they deal with, you know, one of the gang members, it tries to trace his long lost father, but all the storylines to do with Vinny and his bipolar and his family dynamics and stuff. It's really emotional as well. So we don't see it necessarily in this first episode, I would say, before James interjects about that. But I find it funny. And I think what I like about it is that they're not running out of steam, because 5 series in, you could be forgiven for thinking, okay, we've reached the end of the road. But because of the nature of this show, and it's all about, you know, how they're going to generate new ways of earning money, and they get increasingly more inventive, usually involves an animal, sometimes a Shetland pony. There's plenty of creative juice, I think, still in the tank. And I will also, I mean, they've got the background of the will they, won't they, between Vinny and his true love, Erin, played by Michelle Keegan, that, you know, keeps a certain momentum going.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I've never got into it. I think I've watched, we've read this, I think, twice before. Like I've watched, I think, series 1, I think I watched series 2, not the whole things, but a few episodes from each. And I had this, and I thought, you know what, Terry always bangs on about this. I'm gonna give it another go. I watched it here. Like I totally see what you mean. I think there's a warmth in the connections between the characters here. And I can totally see that if you have watched this up until now, you can totally get sucked in by that. The issue I have with it is the comedy doesn't really land. I mean, this has come as shock to absolutely no one. The comedy doesn't really land with me. Like, I don't find it funny. So I think it's perfectly good. And I like what they were doing with it, but I just, it did not make me laugh. And that's the component for me that doesn't work. The humour doesn't quite land. But that, as we have, it's long established, is very much my failing. I enjoyed that there was a lot of bully chat. By that, I mean bully as in from Bullseye. It was an extraordinary amount of great smashing super. Super smashing love great. Your money is safe. There was a lot of that going on. So always nice to have some Bullseye chat in there. And I enjoyed Dominic West as a dodgy doctor.
Oh, he's fab. Yeah, he's the very immoral GP, weed-loving GP of Vinny. And also, we should say that in this first episode, we're introduced to a new character played by Camille Cotin, who was in Call My Agent, the brilliant French comedy drama. And she plays Vinny's...
You said comedy in a French accent, a comedy.
Comedy.
Did I?
Yeah.
a très bon yeah. comedy.
La comedy, comme my agent.
Qui says, je t'aime comme my agent.
Yeah.
What an imbecile.
You did that classic English thing where when you go abroad, instead of speaking the language of the country, you just speak English in the accent of the country.
So awful.
Hello, I am English and I am in France. Can you understand me? It's all very hello.
I'm one step away from being the policeman in hello.
I was just pissing by.
Did you recognise Camille Cotin, how you pronounce it? Do you recognise where she was from as well as being in that show?
Call My Agent.
She was also in at the moment.
Go on.
A Haunting in Venice.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, yes, which I saw at the cinema. Yes.
Where she is presumably searching for the fallen Madonna with the big boobies.
Exactly.
Listen, bring back a low. Maybe not.
Maybe don't.
Yes. So she plays Vinny's new psychiatrist. So she's also a great character to join Dominic West.
Now, I'm not screener shaming, but Boydie, you did not get time to watch this. You have been busy.
Hold on.
He's been a victim of crime.
I waited stupidly, admittedly, until last night to watch this. And I thought, I'd be a nice nightcap after my exertions here in Cambridge. I will watch the new, because I'm a fan of Brassica. I think it's great. I'm fully on board with it. I agree with Kay. But I tried to watch it on my Sky Media Village, but it would not let me log in because of two-factor authentication, because the fact that my fucking phone was stolen recently and there's no way of getting the two-factor authentication to work unless you email Sky. And this was at midnight last night. So yeah, I've not been able to watch it, I'm afraid. And I feel it's very rare for me. James constantly just doesn't watch stuff.
Hang on.
Yeah. No, I agree with Boyd.
Absolutely James inaccurate. Is
this is often James would just go, I didn't fancy watching that.
Scandalous besmirching of my character. It's happened on about like two occasions. Admittedly, Only Murders in the Building is a special case.
Yeah, it happened at least two occasions. And I've never, but this is the first for me, but it is technical. It was a technical issue. I would love to have watched it, but I'm fully pro Brassic, is all I would say.
Brassic, then, which airs on the Sky and the Now.
Thursday, 28th of September at 9 o'clock.
Thank you, Kay. I wasn't paying attention, but Kay picked up the ball seamlessly. Well done. Finally, this week, we have Boiling Point, which not only describes Kay's mood 90% of the time, but is...
Wow.
Okay, full disclosure. I'm going to say this. This is as far as I got with preparation for this episode in terms of scripting, so I have nothing from this point on because I ran out of time.
Some would say you have nothing before, James.
That's fair. I mean, I could say that I submitted the script for Kay's approval and she vetoed everything from this point on. So
that is also
we are now
true.
In uncharted territory. This is the undiscovered country, to use a Star Trek phrase. But the next show is Boiling Point. And this is a four-part series. It's on BBC One. And it is a spin-off of of Philip Barantini's brilliant, and I have to say, extremely stressful 2021 film of the same name. And I remember we reviewed this on the Empire podcast, and I really, really liked it, which is Stephen Graham going steadily mad in a very, very busy kitchen. What's genius about this is that like that film ends on, not a cliffhanger, but it ends on a big... I can say what it is. Like, he has a heart attack at the end of it, and which is amazing because it's just how you feel when watching that film. You are so stressed out, and he literally has a heart attack at the end of it. But this picks up 6 months after the end of the film, and it has Vinette Robinson, who's now taken over. And, you know, it's more of that good stuff. But, as I said, it is extremely stressful, and I'm going to say this series is not a lot less stressful, but, Boydie, were you, I guess, at Boiling Point, obviously, watching this? How did you find it?
Yeah, I too am a huge fan of the film. I think the film is fantastic. And of course, the film, it works on two, well, it works on multiple levels, but the thing about it is not only is it telling this extraordinarily tense...
I buried the lead, didn't I?
You did bury the lead, yeah. It tells this extraordinarily tense, authentic feel, getting the authentic feel of a busy, hectic kitchen, but it's all shot in one take.
It's a single take. It's a one-er. The whole film is a one-er.
The whole film.
Genius.
The whole film is a one-er. And not only that, they didn't cheat as well. Some one-er films effectively cheat.
1917.
Exactly, giving you the impression that it's all done in one take, but in fact they do by various means. Yeah. But this, they actually properly did make the
actual whole thing.
To the extent, I think this was take four, I believe, the kind of fourth time they filmed the whole thing in one go that they used for the final, the one that became the film, if you like. And there were incidents like, I think at one point...
How long was the film?
About 90 minutes, pretty much a taut 90 minutes, yeah. But there was one bit I think when they were talking about the film, where Stephen Graham was confronting another character, and like someone backed into a cameraman or something, I think that's in the one that went out. They just kind of dealt with it, you know, in some way, shape, or form at the time. But what's interesting about this TV spin-off is that to start with, to me, the big question about, I remember when it was announced, and I was thinking, oh, so is every episode going to be one take? That would be kind of quite incredible. And to start with, you think it is, because it starts with a very, very long take that's about 10, 11 minutes. But then after that, which introduces us to the new situation, which is that the sous chef under Stephen Graham's character, Andy, in the film, is now in charge of her own restaurant and her own kitchen, played by Vinette Robinson, while he's back in his home, kind of recovering from that heart attack that James mentioned. He's pretty miserable and kind of in a kind of grim situation.
Very bitter.
Very bitter. and in one take, the first 10 minutes of this series introduces us to all the main characters, about half of which were in the original film, certainly in the kitchen as well as, and we get to meet the front of house staff as well, led by a brilliant head waiter who's hilarious, kind of camp figure, who is brilliant like relief, I have to say.
Yeah, he's great.
Mm. He's great. And we also, so we meet particularly, there's a new guy called Johnny, played by Stephen Odibola, who is like a kind of young guy who's just thrust into the hellhole of the hellscape.
He made me so stressed.
So he, I mean, this isn't a spoiler because, again, very established very early on, has kind of basically lied about his level of experience working in a kitchen to get this job because he's in desperate need of this job. And he just doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And he can't make hollandaise sauce, which is his first task. So it already establishes a similar level of stress as the film, even though, funny, part of what the series is about is that Vinette Robinson's character, Carly, is trying to create a less stressed out environment for her staff, but fucking good luck to her, because within about, you know, a minute of this season launching, she's also got investors in the front of house who are kind of being wined and dined by her main investor, and she needs
raging twats.
Oh my god, such wankers!
Yeah, raging city twats, and she's supposed to be kind of like pleasing them. And then she's got her sous chef Ray Panthaki's character Freeman, who was in the film. He's quite volatile anyway. He was the one who basically ended up practically fighting Andy in the film. He's still angry and still like with everything and gets
furious with some cause.
Completely, 100% with some cause. Yeah, but. Bottom line, it's pretty much almost as good. Even though the one-shot thing is dispensed with after that first 10 minutes, it doesn't matter because it's still shot in such a verite documentary style that it still feels incredibly real and authentic. And, you know, and the research they've done into what life is really like. Phil Barantini, the director, has actually worked in this situation, so he knows what he's talking about, knows what he's doing. But it's so well done and the cast is so uniformly brilliant. Completely naturalistic, their performances, that you totally buy into it. And of course, the reason why in the end they couldn't do the whole series in one take, they said, again, I went to the launch of this and they did a Q&A. And as Barantini basically explained, they want to go into the private lives of these characters. They show us into their home lives, which is crucial, I think. Even in this first episode, there are revelations that are really interesting when you see what they're going on in their domestic life. And they couldn't have done that in one take. Could you imagine? They would have to, like, got the bus from the restaurant. You'd have to follow them getting the bus.
It'd have been like a really tedious episode of 24.
Exactly. So they literally could not do that in a four-part drama series. But it's as authentic. And the funny thing is, of course, we've got the bear, which is very similar to in many ways. And I think uneducated people may think, oh, this is like a British version of the bear. Of course, the film came before the bear.
It's
not like, it's just total coincidence that these two kind of brilliant, different accounts of life working in a proper restaurant kitchen come along roughly at the same time. But I think this is different. It's different to The Bear. You know, it's more just trying to be, it's more going for pure realism, I think, this show. And I think it achieves that.
I was going to say, like, I'm glad you addressed The Bear in the room, because I do think you kind of need to mention that. And I don't think, you know, it's tricky. They are very different, as you say. This one is much more real. The Bear is flashier and it has more glitz to
it. It's more stylized.
It is more stylized. And I feel like when held side by side, it's almost like an unfair comparison because they're trying to do different things. But I do think some people will see this as a slightly more sort of like grounded, gritty Bear without the flash. Like The Bear is, if we're honest, The Bear is the better show, but The Bear is absolutely exceptional. It's an outstanding show. This is also brilliant. And I think what Barantini's done here is great, not least of all because Stephen Graham, while he's in this, his role is much diminished for obvious reasons. And I worried a little about that because he was very much the linchpin of the film. Like, it all revolved around him and his struggles and how he was coping with it. But what's really interesting to me here is, like, Vinette Robinson, who was so good, and Ray Pantaki, again, who's very, very good in the film, both of them have stepped up, and this new ensemble that they built around them is just as compelling to watch. And I think, so Stephen Graham, who's hugely charismatic, massively, he's a magnetic actor, he's wonderful. You know, it's interesting that this largely survives without him. You know, that actually the strength of the premise and the strength of the supporting ensemble is strong enough to carry this. And I found this, I mean, the episode's about an hour long, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely riveting from end to end. Couldn't look away from it. I thought it was fantastic. But it moves at a very different sort of pace and in a very different frequency to The Bear. They're both very stressful shows, but in slightly different ways. It's not just that, you know, kitchens are very stressful places to live and there are lots of people shouting. It is, and there are, but it does have a very different vibe to it. And I think this first episode in particular, by putting you in the really, really squirmingly awkward shoes of New Guy, as they call him, where he's clearly out of his depth and everyone is yelling and he's fucking up and he's having a nightmare. I thought that first episode very perfectly kind of positions it as his story, like how he goes through it. And then obviously it ends with, it gives you more background into his story. But yeah, it's a really great piece of television.
I feel like The Bear's kitchen is relentlessly frenetic, right?
Yeah.
It never eases up. Whereas with this, what I like is that you've got the, you know, the disparity. So like at the beginning, it starts very calmly. You know, they seem to be enjoying a banter. It's clear that she's Carly, the character of Carly, is setting out a different agenda. She wants it to be more relaxed. You know, there's playful banter, everything's thing. And then obviously it very rapidly disintegrates and unravels and it becomes more stressful, but it's not just the stuff that's happening in the kitchen. It's the wanker investors. And for me, she's just the MVP because I like the fact that this is her endeavor. She's really trying to make it work, but she's got all this domestic drama going on, which is adding such a lot of stress onto her plate. And that part of it actually was the worst bit for me in terms of the tension, because it was like she's got commitments outside of the kitchen that take her away from this thing that is so important to her. Her loyalties are really, really torn. And you can really feel that, you know, you can put yourself in her shoes and you understand it. I thought it was brilliant. I understand that people will naturally lean to compare it to The Bear, but I think we just need to, like, you know, draw a line. Although having said that, I was constantly thinking, why aren't they shouting out behind and corner?
Yeah, like, hands.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I think this is, you know, this is really good.
Yeah. Great show. And Boydy, this airs on BBC One when?
Sunday. This coming Sunday, the 1st of October, I believe it is. Yes.
Exciting. Week by week?
9 p.m. I think so. Do you know, I'm not 100% sure.
We're going to say week by week.
Let's
we have no real
week.
Evidence to base that
no.
on, but we're going to say it is.
Yes, let's say it.
Boiling point then. What else is out this week other than Gen V, formerly
you know
known
what?
As the boys Gen V?
Yeah, it really is just Gen V this week, I believe. I can't think there's anything else that we need to mention, unless I'm very much mistaken. It's Gen V. It's the
well, Gen
thing.
V is the spin-off from The Boys, and this drops on Friday the 29th. It is embargoed, so we'll be covering it on this week's Pilot Plus.
Exactly.
Yeah. And nothing else is out this week. Well,
no,
that's it. That's it for the podcast. Yeah. We're done. We are finished. We are out. Boydy's got stuff to do. James Corden's got reviews to write. If you enjoyed the show, please do one of two things. Please go on to Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a 5-star rating. If you are James Corden, leave us several. Also, if you'd like to subscribe to Pilot Plus to help us keep the lights on, we'd very much appreciate that as well. You can do so at emperoronline.com/ Pilot TV. And you can follow us on social media at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, and at Pilot TV Pod. Next week on this very podcast, we will be watching some shows because Loki season 2 arrives, but we almost certainly won't be able to watch that in time. Lupin saison 3 arrives, and Kay will be reviewing that entire thing in a French accent. You can look forward to that. I very much like the show Lupin. I enjoyed
Says Kay. After today, we can't talk about this again. Thank you very much.
I think we all know that's not going to happen. Mira Sial's got a show, Mrs. Sidhu Investigates, so we could maybe watch that. I don't know. We'll see.
Payback with Morven Christie, who I've interviewed for this very podcast.
We definitely have to. So
you interviewed
that.
Morven Christie, so you knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And yet still didn't put it in the calendar. That's extraordinary.
I'm looking at the calendar now.
But more important than whether or not Boydie has updated the calendar, next week's show will not have one very important thing. Kay, who will not be here. And it's just occurred to me that we will need to get someone else to review Lupin in a French accent because you will not be available.
I know someone who would be brilliant at that task.
Yes. I think we all know someone who might be good at that. So I will call the Steph phone and see if she can step in. And
Stephanie
Silla. Silla can step in. I'm going to stop that now because it's a hate crime. Yeah. Right. Anyway, that is it for this week's Pilot Podcast. Do join us on Thursday for Pilot Plus and indeed
Gen V. Are we going to do our pick of the week?
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about that. What's our pick of the week?
I mean, Boiling Point and Long Shadow are both brilliant, but I am going to say Long Shadow. I think it's...
Me too. Yeah. It's between the two. Yeah. They're both brilliant, but the Long Shadow.
They are both brilliant. I'm going Boiling Point, because I'm contrary that way.
Boyd's off punting now.
Yes. Yep. Boyd has to go. I'm going to go into the office. Kay's probably just going to loaf around the house. And look out the window.
Cheeky shit.
Pilot out.